Welcome to Wanderings and Wool Gathering, episode 104. On whatever platform you're watching or listening, if you like what you hear, give us a review or comment. We would love it if you subscribed and feel free to share with your friends. Tonight's episode is brought to you by 4411 Creative Agency. The good folks at 4411 provide custom marketing and flawless execution. Creative is their middle name. Head over to 4411creative.com to find out more. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, the Kokomo Lantern, a journalistic endeavor focused upon the simple principles of illuminating the good and eliminating the shadows in our local community. Join the Lantern Substack to get access to all Lantern material. Tonight on the show, we are reviewing Zero and Below by Crowbar, and we're answering Metalhead Monday's challenge and playing Who's That Band, Lester Bang style. Joining me for the fun tonight is JPP.
Easy listening sounds for the hard of hearing. It's JPP.
Welcome.
Greetings. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I am really good. Just had dinner and trying not to fall asleep, but we have exciting things to talk about, so I think I'll be okay.
If you fall asleep and you're on the show, we are in trouble.
Stick around, folks.
And joining us tonight is none other than the man himself, Metalhead Mundy.
Step inside into his mind. It's boy band time. It's
Metalhead Mundy.
Picture never gets old.
Neither does that song. Sometimes I sing it to myself, and I don't know why. Maybe it's to get the Joe Rife theme song out of my head.
Yeah. I can see that.
That's one of my all-time favorites. All right. We have a huge show. We've got your challenge, Mr. Mundy.
Yep.
We've got our Lester Bangs challenge, and we've got an album to review. So I think without further ado, let's get going on this. Let's start off with our Lester Bangs. What do you have for us?
Well, let me switch over here so I can see what I'm doing. So I have one. I got the idea. It's sort of in a roundabout way relevant to things happening this weekend. So that's your first clue. And I don't know. I feel like this is easy. I'll probably say something that gives it away, but that's half the fun of it. So
I hope so, because I'm dumb. I need the help.
So I found this article on UpRocks. It's from September 12th of 2018 by Mr. Stephen Hayden. And he calls it, the title of the article, it has the name in it. So obviously, if I come across the name of the artist, I'll say blank or something right. Like that. So it says, "Why blank is good in spite of being mostly bad."
So, okay, first question before you start then. The article's 2018. Is the album 2018?
I mean, yes, he had an album. Well, I said he, so he had an album that came out around this time, so yeah.
Okay.
Right off the bat, I mean, he starts throwing shade because he's talking about how this album came out, and he's like, "You're forgiven if you didn't notice." Like, oof. He's talking about how someone in Rolling Stone said this artist lends his voice to the resistance, which is code for ignore this album, or like this guy is not nice, but he kind of turns it around and gets nice. It's weird. I don't know. It's kind of a backhanded compliment, this whole thing. Let me see what I wanted to let you guys start going was, oh, so he basically says this guy has three great songs and 80 crappy songs. So, and these three songs that he says are great, he could listen to all day long. They're perfect ear candy. unrepentantly retro rock and soul that stops just short of being blatantly derivative of any specific song or artist. I mean, this dude is like a master of backhanded compliments. It's pretty funny. But he says, in each instance, blank was able to create a fully realized homage to the greatest classic rock station in the world, commingling the power of Zeppelin and Hendrix with the velvety swing of Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye. And he says this artist has 80 bad songs, one of which might be the worst song ever written. And he goes on to make fun of the lyrics. And he talks about a big cover that he did and calls it interminable and bombastic. It says it almost certainly had a special place of honor on the jukebox at Abu Ghraib. And
Okay, so when you said
like, I know
the worst songs ever and the lyrics, I just went to Kanye and Bound 2 because that might be the worst song I've ever heard in my life.
No. Okay, but does he have like the, what did he say, the power of Zeppelin and Hendrix?
He thinks he does. Ask him, he'll tell you.
I know, right?
Right.
There was some good stuff in here. I'm looking at it online, so I didn't like bookmark anything.
Is this a person who was a member of a band but did a solo project?
No, mostly solo artist.
I think I know who it is.
All but... solo artist. Do you want to guess before I say anything else? Or
does anyone watching right now want to throw a comment out there before JPP tells us what it is? Because he'll nail it.
Okay, I'm back to looking at you guys. I'll go back to that if you want me to say more.
Well, nobody else is taking a stab, so...
Okay, let me just ask a question. Is it going to go my way?
It very well could.
Mm. Okay. Lenny freaking Kravitz.
It is Lenny Kravitz. And I said it was relevant because his daughter is all over the news, obviously, because of the Batman. So,
right.
So listen to this. This one's great. This is what I was going to say next. Says, as a half black, half Jewish, funky hard rocker, Lenny is a true musical unicorn. In the 90s, he was the rare platinum selling hit maker from the rock world who couldn't be easily classified as an alternative punk or metal act. During the grunge era, it was hard to tell whether Lenny was 20 years too late or 20 years too early.
Wow. An
old world rock star who was fashion model handsome and preoccupied with making hippie style pronouncements, Lenny Kravitz was the opposite of angsty. Instead, he preached about how love should rule the world like the Mussolini of peace. And while Curtis Mayfield and Prince were also obvious influences, he didn't really slot as an R&B artist either. He was just Lenny Kravitz. He found his lane in the 80s and nobody has really joined him there ever since.
I would hate to see how this guy treats waiters when he goes out the
door. I know.
It's Mr. Pink from Reservoir Dogs.
His three great songs that Lenny Kravitz has made, in his opinion, are Always on the Run, It Ain't Over Till It's Over, and Are You Gonna Go My Way? Everything else he says is garbage. The song he was trashing, he said Fly Away might be the worst song ever written. I wish that I could fly into the sky so very high, just like a dragonfly. So you want to fly like a dragonfly? GTFO.
Well, he obviously never heard Fly by Sugar Ray.
Seriously. So, yeah, I thought that was funny. And like I said, with the Zoe connection, you know, big news this weekend, I thought that was a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Paul, what was the first thing that tipped you off?
The kind of the throwback to Zeppelin and such. And, you know, Lenny was very successful with the hits he had, but, you know, there wasn't a ton of them, you know. So that's kind of where I was going with it. Because when Are You Gonna Go My Way came out, you know, he had that Flying V and he had that kind of nice fuzz tone riff going on and that kind of thing. So I was definitely feeling the Hendrix, the Zeppelin, the classic rock. I dug that album, actually. You know, he said that was but the only banger on there. I disagree. I think that album's really solid.
I disagree a lot, too. I'm a Lenny Kravitz fan, so I like his stuff a lot.
He's super talented.
Yeah.
There's no denying that.
Well, I mean, most of his albums, he plays everything. Mm-hmm. Like, the band is a live band. Like, he's playing everything on the records.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his band always was really stylish too. They always looked really cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The fashion model thing was that accurate. I mean, he's a very, very beautiful man. So, and he likes to dress well.
Yeah.
He does indeed. Well, excellent job. I'm glad we picked that out because there's nothing worse than issuing a challenge like that and then nobody gets it. So.
Yeah.
So, Paul, you answered it. So, guess what? You get to do it next week.
Hooray! All right, cool.
What did I win?
Are we going to do it? Are we going to do it with our comic book friends next week? I think we should. What the heck?
We could do that. We could send it to them.
We'll make them play along.
No, yeah. That'd be cool.
All right. So, Mr. Mundy's doing double duty. He also had the challenge for the week. Why don't you let everybody know, and then we will wow them with our visuals.
So, the basic challenge was take any song you like and do a video treatment for it. So, that's a bit of industry lingo. Treatment is just, basically... a band or an artist would meet with a director and the director would present them with a treatment, which is just kind of a basic idea of what they see when they hear the song. So it doesn't have to be every second detailed and then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. I'm like, I don't care about that. Just, what do you hear or what do you see when you hear this song? What do you think would make compelling visuals to go along with the song? That kind of thing. Just a basic video treatment.
Very cool. Paul, what'd you come up with?
Well, I wasn't here last week, so I'm kind of pulling it out of the back of my head. But when I was listening to our review this week, Crowbar, spoiler alert, when you listen to Crowbar, you know what to expect. You're going to get a consistent product. It's Riff Lord galore. Mm-hmm. But because he's Riff Lord, I thought, what is a nice contrast for Kirk and the crew? Because everything's dark, brooding, really just deep, guttural. You can go with all of those adjectives. Get your thesaurus out and find all the sides that lean into the cellar and the basement, if you will. But what if we put Kirk as Captain Kirk in the USS Enterprise?
And I love it already.
The music video is basically on the bridge and they're trying to deal with some alien life form and resolve a conflict with their instrumentation and the lyrics and so on and so forth, essentially.
How does that work? How do they do that with their instruments?
Well, they've got the bridge and they've got the little bells and whistles and all that stuff. Well, it's connected to the bass. It's connected to the guitar. And, instead of the deck up front, that's where the kit is, if you will. And the drummer is up there just pounding away to control the ship or something. I don't know. At the end of the day, like I said, I'm spitballing. I wasn't here last week, but I just think it would be funny to put Kirk in an element that isn't typically him and just kind of get some entertainment and something a little more jovial out of the deal.
Mm-hmm. That's good, because he would totally be down for that too, because he's hilarious. If you listen to him talk, he's a funny guy. And back in the day, he was real tight with Pantera, and every time he was with him, they would get him drunk and paint him green, and he would be going around smashing stuff as the Hulk.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So, he likes to have a good time. I he'd probably get a kick out of that.
Cool. Well, I'll have to reach out to him and say, hey, I got an idea.
But you didn't say, I don't remember you saying what song you would do that to.
Well, like I said, I'm throwing it out of my nose right now. So
that's matter. Not how this show works, Paul. Yeah. We need a song.
Well, how about Reinterpreting a Lie? Is that from this new album?
There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's spoiler alert. That's my jam on this album. So we'll go with that one.
That's the Reanimating a Lie.
Reanimating. So, yes. Thank you. Yes.
They could reanimate the lie out of deep space or something.
Oh, the Borg would be involved.
Yeah. Well, you got to have the Borg and Q. You got to throw Q in somewhere.
Absolutely.
There you go.
So I went from, metal to complete nerddom in one shot. So that's me in a nutshell, folks.
We love it all.
We do. Okay. I have to go next because you go last because it's your challenge. So, not surprisingly, I chose a Rush song, but I did not choose it because of Rush. Let me tell you why. So, my favorite poet is Samuel Taylor Coleridge. And the song Xanadu is based on the poem Kubla Khan. And so the coolest thing about, actually better than the poem itself, is the backstory that, you know, Samuel Taylor Coleridge was addicted to opiates. He was very sickly a lot of the time. And so he had this dream, which became the poem Kubla Khan. Oh, look, my daughter just chimed in. She knows he dined on honeydew. And so the cool thing about this is he says that he was awakened from the dream by a visit by a man from Porlock who had come and awakened him. And so after the visit, he feverishly wrote down everything he could remember, but all he could remember was what is now the poem. But there was a lot lost because he was awakened from this dream. So my idea for the video is that we start with the beginning. Xanadu, the song, has a long intro, as a lot of prog rock songs do. And so it would begin with the man from Porlock starting his journey. And as he's in his little coach traveling to meet Samuel Taylor Coleridge, you get that intro and you get the first verse, which is essentially the poem. As he gets to the door, he knocks, he meets Samuel Taylor Coleridge. And then as we go into the next two verses and chorus and all that, that's the part that Rush interpreted as how it went. So I kind of see it as out of the coach windows, you see like glimpses of what the poem would look like or what the song will look like. And when they get there, as the new parts begin, you sort of zoom in through his eye into his brain and you get to pick up the rest of the song. And that's where the video starts. And those glimpses that you saw along the way are fleshed out into this full video where this immortal man goes nuts because he's immortal and you can't live forever while everybody else around you dies. And it would be filmed in Ireland. It's got to be really green and there's got to be rich hills and there's caverns and ice. And so that's what I'd like to see.
Sounds very expensive.
No, you can shoot it on your iPhone. You didn't say there was a budget.
That's good. That's true. I didn't really put any limitations on
it. You did not. No, I've just been fascinated with that since college. The whole story, I think, is almost cooler than the actual poem. So,
I mean, that's exactly what I wanted, you know? So just what do you see when you hear this song? And that's exactly what that was. So good job. Mm-hmm.
What do you have?
Well, I also, so I got to tell you, I started looking at, I was going to try to tie it to something, you know, relevant, recent, whatever. And I got the idea. I'm like, I'm going to see if I can think of something to do for Prince's Bat Dance. Cause you know, new Batman movie, like what? And I watched the actual video for Bat Dance and I'm like, no way. I'm not even touching this thing. It's so specific to that movie, to Burton's 89 Batman. I was just like, I mean, there's so much dialogue in the thing. And I'm like, I mean, if you pull the dialogue out of there, it's almost an instrumental. So I was like, nah, I'm not going to do that. So I decided to also go with Crowbar. The first song I ever heard from them was All I Had, I Gave.
Oh, yes.
It is an absolute classic. It's such a good song. And the video is, I mean, it's literally just kind of an edited performance video. It's just different shots of the band edited and like blended to faded together, you know, and like, I'm like, yeah, okay. I mean, it's fine, but it's just them. It's whatever. So
I remember one shot of him, like where he's almost leaning forward and lip syncing not necessarily candid shots, but certainly, you know, the director's like, all right, let's look tough hanging over this wall.
Well, it's like he's sitting in a chair with his elbows on his knees, and he's like,
yeah,
you know, I'm like, okay.
I haven't seen it in centuries, but yeah.
Yeah.
I
mean, and then the cameras are, the cameras are like going around the band members as they're playing. I'm like, all right.
Yep.
Whatever. I have a better idea.
I can't wait to hear it.
So, I mean, you take the title, All I Had, I Gave, and you listen to the lyrics and you kind of get the impression of someone who has had a rough life, someone that life's kind of beaten them up a little bit. So I kind of ran with that, and I, you know, use this video to kind of really show a guy whose life is falling apart, who's really down on his luck. You know, he's like, he's losing his job. He's get, you get the shot of the bills with the past due stamp on him, and, you know, fight with his girlfriend, that kind of stuff. Classic tropes, you know, show this dude's life's falling apart.
Got an F in science class.
Yes.
And then probably he bonds with a symbiote.
And for some reason, he hates Peter Parker. I don't know.
Right. So weird.
But, so, you know, like he gets to the end of, show him somewhere at the end of his rope. You know, I don't know if he's like maybe getting on drugs or he's like suicidal. You could show him be suicidal several different ways to do that. You know, something like that where he's obviously at the end of his rope and kind of his a friend or friends like kind of come to his rescue and stop him from doing something drastic. And the video kind of ends with them, you know, getting him help somehow or something like that. I don't know, you know, whether that would be some kind of treatment center or, you know, something, but basically that's the idea. The guy's down on his luck, show his life falling apart, and then it kind of turns around at the end.
Will the band appear at all, or is it just simply like a movie?
I mean, they could be the actors in the video. You know, that's doable.
Okay. I didn't know if you were going to, because sometimes they cut to like the band playing and it goes back. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I'm not interested in that. It's, you know, what they don't have to be in it.
Kirk could
a
be
lot of times the band prefers to not be in it because then they don't have to do anything. So.
Yeah.
True.
I'm not an actor kind of thing. Oh, you know, Kirk could be the convenience store clerk or something, gives them shit or something.
Or they could all be in it and be like really stiff actors, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. I wish T-Bags would have been with us tonight. I'm sure his treatment would have been fantastic. So, bummer.
Yeah. He would have broke the rules, though.
He would have. It would have been a crossover between Nine Inch Nails and Tool. Mm-hmm. Or it would have been like a Nine Inch Nails song with Tool acting. Or Maynard acting in that song. So
there you go.
Yep.
All right. Well, that was fantastic. That was cool. Really, it took me, I think, until Friday night or Saturday morning to finally come up with the song that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I thought about it a lot. It was hard.
Yeah. And you know what's cool is this challenge, you know, once I've caught wind of what we were doing, reminded me of something that I stumbled upon on the internet a while back. And it was more or less accidental visuals. You know, kind of like Dark Side of the Moon with the Wizard of Oz, that sort of thing. There's a video from a band called Godflesh. It's actually not from Godflesh, I should reiterate. It's from a gentleman on YouTube named Clay Franklin, and I pulled it up. I'll share the link so that way people can find it and watch it. But basically, when he worked at a video store, he would listen to music while having movies on silently, and he stumbled upon an insane coincidence in 2008 while working at the Original Life video on Bedford Avenue in Brooklyn. It's basically Jesus Christ Superstar with the Godflesh song Anthem off the album Hymns. And the way the drums kick in and there's people kind of bouncing and dancing and such, it syncs just in time. It was just a happy accident and it fit so well. It's very bizarre. So, wow. You know, that said, this may be a really tough challenge, but can you think of any kind of accidental visuals that you may have encountered with a song that gave you a vibe?
man.
Oof. That's your is that your official challenge?
I'm putting you guys to the dirt. God, here.
You hate us.
Wow. Okay. I thought you were asking us to do that right now.
I'm no, like, nope. You got a week.
No, actually, we have 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, we won't do that big challenge with Starchild Comics, but so in 2 weeks. That's good though, because that's a challenge and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
So interesting. I like it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, I feel dumbfounded. So we're just going to have to move on.
Challenge begrudgingly accepted.
yeah, exactly. Oh, we need the old song or the old sound for us.
Yes, I'll have to dig that up. It's been a while.
Just throw it in later when we're talking. Okay. Over me, please.
Easy enough.
Okay. All right, well, that brings us to our album review of the week, which is Crowbar. And I think... no surprises. We knew what we were getting, and we got a lot of it.
Excuse me.
Mundy, why don't you lead us in with this? And this was your number one choice this week.
Yeah, so, excuse me, I had to get rid of this. Pardon me. Sure everyone loved that.
I enjoyed it.
So Crowbar's been around since I think that actual band formed. Oh, you guys are freezing up on my end.
Uh-oh.
I think we're good now. Okay. So Crowbar as a band have been around since 1990. Kirk Weinstein, he was a musician well before that. He was in bands and all through the 80s and stuff. He's from the New Orleans area, which would have been another good reason to have Tony on this week. But exactly. But so the current lineup is Kirk Weinstein, Tommy Buckley, Matt Brunson, and Shane Wesley. Tons of past members. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things where Kirk's always been the driving force, and he's just kind of, as guys fall off, he replaces them and whatever. But I want to say this is. Oh boy, yeah, there's a lot. This may be like their 10th or 11th album. Not sure. They're pretty prolific.
Yeah.
Kirk put out a solo album a couple years ago, had a lot of covers and stuff on it. Well, had a few covers, but it was mostly originals. He covered Aqualung, which was interesting. Kirk has a very distinct voice. Like, if you hear him, like, there's no one else it could possibly be.
Right.
So, and I'm sure that's not for everyone, but I love the guy and he's real funny. I've heard him interviewed several times. He's real tight with, Jamie Josta from Hatebreed. I've heard him on his show a lot. I think actually Jamie might manage Crowbar too.
Hmm.
But yeah, Jamie's told a lot of great stories about Kirk over the years. So, I think Kirk calls him Jostafarian or something like that. he's got stupid little names like that for everybody. So, but, yeah, Crowbar's, they're a great band, man. I mean, they've been around forever. They've been doing it a long time. I think they're on tour. They're on tour right now. I can't remember. I want to say Sepultura. I don't think that's right though.
I just saw the bill and I can't remember who. Oh, it's Gwar. They're going to be Gwar. On
Gwar. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But they are on tour right now. They're Road Dogs. So I know the last couple of years have been rough on them.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think this is actually the 12th album. And okay. If I'm not mistaken, this is the first album with acoustic guitar.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. He made a comment about it somewhere and I'll never be able to find it again, but I read somewhere where they were putting acoustic on this. So in one song.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's barely there, but
yeah, exactly.
It's used kind of effectively.
It's almost buried.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so Zero and Below just came out a couple days ago and we're going to talk about it.
All right.
All right. So Paul, you mentioned earlier your favorite song, which talk about that a little bit. That was not on my list of my my favorite tracks. I'm kind of interested.
Just a fun ass riff, if I can be blunt. It's funny because, you know, listening to this whole album up to that point, it's Crowbar. It's definitely you know, Kirk doing his thing. There are a handful of guitarists that I consider kind of eccentric in their own way and unique enough that I, when I hear the riff, I know it's them. Tommy Victor is one of them. Of course, James Hetfield with his intricacies. Mm-hmm. Kirk is in that list as well because of the fact that he just really does a lot of stacked kind of lower harmony things, like what's called lowered fourths. So the power chord sounds thicker, harmonies that just have this brutality. Like even major harmonies just sound evil in a way with his fingers. It's almost like this gigantic beast when the power chords are full. And then when it opens up to a harmony, it almost becomes like the mouth becoming wide open. So it adds dramatic effect. The riffs kind of tell a story with his playing that no other person's really been able to do. And he's got his grooves, his shuffles, that sort of thing. But when this one came on, I mean, there's some slide going on with it too, that just had a little extra power. And then it had this for Crowbar, a kind of a double time stomp in the middle. It was almost like a revival section. Talking about visuals, I can almost see that meme where the preacher's slapping, you know, the congregants and all that kind of stuff, and everybody's clapping and all that kind of stuff. I can see that happening with that moment in that tune.
Reanimating Alive was fantastic. Mm-hmm. There's tons of good riffs in that one. It's not just one. There are several.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love the about halfway through, like it kind of speeds up a little bit. And
yeah,
I like that part. And then the long fade out riff is, I mean, they just drop the vocals and just jam out on this riff. And it just kind of fades as it mm-hmm. plays out.
Yeah, and I kind of wish they would have let it run longer before they fit it out, because the drummer started doing some flashier stuff.
Yes, he did. Yeah. I was like, whoa, what's that? And then it's over.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I want more of that, you know? But that's the beauty of leaving the listener hanging. You know, they want more. And
yeah,
I was hooked in for sure.
Let's start with track one, because we always have to do our album opener.
Yes.
And this one really, for me, it's not necessarily one of my favorite songs, maybe top four or five, but killer track to start the record with, because it has an amazing groove. The riff is there. It really sets the tone for the rest of the record. And I like what you guys said about that last song. What I thought was cool about the whole record is you get these great riffs. Every song is hammering and hard and in your face, but the tempo changes all over the place. And I think that's really cool. And that's what really keeps the album interesting. And this one, I think The Fear That Binds is a perfect album opener. I really dug this one. Killer groove to start this whole thing off.
Yeah, that's one thing about Crowbar is they kind of get associated with what is called sludge metal, or sometimes mm-hmm. doom metal. And it's that, you know, they never get super fast. They are not a speed metal band by any stretch of the imagination. It's always hit. Kirk's riffs are, I mean, it's exactly that. It's sludgy. They're slower. It has that impending sense of doom. Mm-hmm. Like it's just heavy and it just hangs there. And it just, you know, it's Crowbar. And when this song started, it's like you get that instant hit of your Crowbar dopamine. And I'm like, oh, yeah, here we go. It is a great opener. There's lots of really dynamic part changes in this one. And there is an absolutely sick breakdown at the end.
Yeah.
It is great. I like this one a lot. This is one of my favorites.
Yeah. I think too, that the slower nature of these grooves, like it's not thrash and all that. I think it caters to his voice more, because the way he sings, he can't go too fast. You know, it's kind of a slower growl than a lot of them. And
I would agree with that. I think, yeah, that's very, very accurate. I think if he tried to sing quickly like a Dave Mustaine or something like that, I think he would get marble mouthed a little bit.
Yeah. For sure. So, I mean, Kirk is genuinely himself musically, and that's a beautiful thing, because, you know, he is a unique voice. He's a unique player, that kind of thing. And what he does works for him, and it's in many ways for me hard to replicate. I mean, yeah, I can play the riffs, but to try to write like him and try to wrap my mind about how he sees the voicings, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, writing and playing something somebody else wrote are two very different things.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So for me, the next song that really stood out is Chemical Gods. Sweet, sweet groove on this one. And then obviously about drug addiction. Mm-hmm. And good message through the song, but I love the groove. This is probably my second favorite song on the record.
This was, I think, there's a reason this was the lead single. It is about the most single sounding track on here. Mm-hmm. There's also a video. I'd recommend checking that out. Big riffs. And I mean, that's, I guess you could say that's kind of a given for Crowbar, but this one, like, it feels a little extra big. I don't know if they constructed this as a single, but I feel like once they had all these songs and they listened through them, I mean, there's no way to deny them. Like, we're putting that one out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I feel like this, honestly, listening to it, the music works really well with the lyrics to paint this picture of the ups and downs of addiction. In a really interesting way. Like, I really just couldn't get that out of my head. Like, man, it doesn't need the lyrics to tell this story. Like, it's, if you told me this song was about addiction and it didn't have lyrics, I'm like, I get it. I could see that. Very good storytelling in this song.
Yes.
It's got that shuffle, you know, kind of like the Southern metal shuffle, if you will. There's an element of dime in there, the Pantera thing too. And it's not a ripoff by any means. It's just, I think it's the region, and it just delivers. Like, as soon as that riff opens up, you're just nodding your head. Your face is grimacing a little bit and you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah. I'll let you guys pick one here in a minute, but I'm going to go to my favorite song on the record, which was It's Always Worth the Gain. Okay. And I picked it for two reasons. First, it had my favorite intro. It had that cool little guitar riff, and then it had those super cool drum breakdowns with those little strokes and triples. And I loved how that led into the song. But then the other cool thing about it is I came away with this meaning, you know, kind of almost an inspirational dig in. No matter what happens to you, dig in and fight this thing. You know, there are better things waiting for you. And then find out it's about, you know, how cutthroat the record industry is and how they screw everyone over. And it's about the lessons that you learn. So it's one of those that is pointed for them, but it's so available for everybody. We can all meet this song where we are and get something out of it. And I think that is the true measure of a great song. So between the two, I mean, that was easy for me to pick that as my favorite one.
Yeah, I was right there with you on the meaning, and I mean, it does. It definitely works how they intended it, and as, you know, with a little more open meaning for people to put what they want on it. And I was right there with you for that. The drums on this song are absolutely killer. Absolutely killer. This is probably my favorite song drum wise.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny is this song reminded me of something that I couldn't put my finger on at the beginning. And it was because of the pauses. It's not as fast as it, but I think Mundy would definitely remember. I think it was called Midnight Mountain by Cathedral. Do you remember that song?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It just kind of had that boogie to it, even though it was slower than that song. Yep. But even just the way the harmonies came into play and just the general brutal nature of the guitar tone. Cathedral was a lot more heavy than this, as far as like the sludge factor goes, but it just kind of gave me that reminiscence and that vibe. And it was probably more subconscious than it was intentional for sure. But, you know, just great feel, great groove, great tune.
You are saying boogie and I say bounce. Like it's got a little, you know, you feel that bounce and you're like, yeah, all right, cool. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know exactly. And it's that alternating of the guitar and the drums that just kind of leads to that, which is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mundy, what was your favorite one on the record?
Well, I Fear That Binds You was good. Chemical Gods is great. The Reanimating Alive was a favorite. My other highlight on here, I would have to say, was the other single and the other video, which was also my favorite title on the record, mm-hmm. which is Bleeding From Every Hole.
Do not rent that.
Does not sound like a good day, but but it's a great song title.
And a great opening. Another great open that dude, bass that intro. Bass,
yes, absolutely yeah. slays. And he does it more than once because mm-hmm. there's part like the everything drops out and then he picks it back up and they kick back in. And
yeah.
But good, great bass work on this one. And the slowdown on the chorus, mm-hmm. that riff is just monster. It's so good. So good. I love the groove on this song. And I would highly recommend the video. It is not for the faint of heart.
Neither is the song, really.
Yeah, it's the video is pretty gruesome, but it's interesting. I would check it out.
Yeah, my first notes were great bass intro and up-tempo banger, because it was. But then... Yeah. It, like you said, it kind of slows down and it gets like super serious because it's all about total desperation and being mm-hmm. in these super dark places. So he yeah. just like, man, he can hit it lyrically, musically, yep. and really sell the song. So this yeah. was another one of my favorites.
What's cool about Kirk though is with his lyrics, like he can go somewhere like this and then turn it around and two tracks later. I mean, the name of the song is Crush Negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about, you know, doing exactly that. So he's, he's a great lyricist. I think he's, in general, I think Crowbar as a band and Kirk in particular are highly, highly underrated in the metal community.
An essential part of this balanced breakfast.
Yes.
Musically, they're phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he has my favorite thing. I thought about doing it for about half a second. And I was going to put my hands up like, you know, in the camera like that. And because he has the knuckle tats and his hands say Riff Lord.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's talk just for a moment then about the album closer. That's always one that we dig into. So Zero and Below, also the title of the album, is the album closer. And it's a slower song. It's a little different for them. And it does. This is the one with the acoustic guitar. First time ever. So. What'd you guys think?
I don't really feel like it's terribly different for them. I mean, there's a couple of tracks on this album that are, you know, more down tempo, and they work really well in that pocket. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the sludge and the doom, and the, it's right there. They're all over that. This is a great closer. I mean, it does kind of bring everything down and, you know, you kind of ride it out. Lots of long drawn out riffage that's all over the place. The acoustic touch that kind of happens earlier in the song is they come back to that at the end and fade out with that. And it's weird to think that that's the first time they've ever put that on a record. That's bizarre, but you know, whatever. I wish they
in his old age.
Yeah. I wish they did more because it sounds great. So
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say the song felt like an instrumental. Mm-hmm. You know, because the lyrics are pretty sparse throughout.
Yes.
It's very much an instrumental. Beautiful. I love it.
It's funny when I listened to it after Reanimating a Lie, I was like, where is this going? You know, because I thought it felt like something that was preceding the album closer because I was driving at the time. And I started to feel a little bummed. I thought, man, the last track should have been the closer, you know, just really end on a heavy note. But then as I listened to the song more and I started hearing the harmonies and kind of the theme coming into play a lot, you know, I actually pulled into my drive as the last 30 seconds was happening. I stayed in the car and just finished it out. And I was like, all right, I see what you're driving at. This is good. Mm-hmm. You know? But it just kind of threw me off at first. And then I went back and listened to it again and knowing what to expect then. And I was happy with it.
All right. Did you guys want to talk about any other tracks before we grade this baby?
I wanted actually to speak a little bit on Kirk Winstein as a vocalist. I think when people hear him, he kind of, they tend to immediately pigeonhole him into, you know, that scratchy, you know, weird Kirk thing. But the dude is a good singer. He can really sing. Like, there's a couple of songs on here, like the third track, Confess to Nothing, I think is a good snapshot of his abilities. He's obviously, you know, he doubles himself, you know, with the studio and whatever, but he is creating his own melodies, you know, like he's not just doubling his vocals for to make it sound bigger. He's actually harmonizing with himself, and man, it's good. It's so good. And there's actually the Crush Negativity, which I mentioned earlier. I like the vocals better than the rest of the song on that one. I mean, I just, Kirk is a good singer, and I don't think, again, he gets near the due he deserves. I would say if anyone is interested in hearing a little more of his range, you should definitely go check out his solo album, because he's kind of all over the place on that. And he does a lot more melodic singing, you know, so he's good. I love him. I'm a fan.
Well, Mr. Andy Jenkins might concur. He says the song phrasings remind me of a crooner or Michael Bublé.
Nice.
Well, then. And then you can't forget his other project, Kingdom of Sorrow, as well.
Yeah, I think he's excellent, but I think he also knows where the sweet spot is, and he goes to it. He doesn't try to go outside of it and do all kinds of crazy things. He's got his pocket, and he stays in it, and he delivered on this one for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's been a while. I've had many naps. Do you remember the name of the album that All I Had I Gave was on Monday?
I don't. It's their first album. I don't remember the name of it.
I implore you to listen to that, Foggy, because he does an interesting cover of No Quarter from Led Zeppelin.
Yes, so good. So good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, so, it's another one. You think of Robert Plant singing that song, and then you listen to Kirk sing that song. You're like, oh my God, it totally works. It's so good.
Yeah. Yep. Precisely. So, you know, for me, as a guitar player and a fan of Kirk from that angle quite a bit, I just really always appreciate, no matter from the first album to now, there's always this clarity in the harmonies, even with the thick, doomy nature, if you will. There's just this finesse that is always present. And those times that he does the harmony, he doesn't over embellish them, but they just really hit a feeling. They strike the right nerve for me. You know, it's like digging at that itch and you're like, oh, that hurts, feels good kind of thing. And you know what I mean? It just really resonates in the right way. And I will always appreciate him for that. And I'm glad this album came out, because it was time for me to revisit.
No Quarter was on their second record, which was their self-titled. The first one was Obedience Through Suffering.
Okay.
The second one might have been the one that had All I Had I Gave on it.
Yeah.
I thought it was their first, but that might have just been the first time we heard them.
Right. And they broke on Headbangers Ball and all that stuff. And
yeah.
Yep. And that was on 93.
And Beavis and Butthead, don't forget that.
Oh, yeah.
That's good, Paul. I like that.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, let's rate this. So, JPP, what do you give it?
4.5. And yeah, I've already listened to it 3 times. It's going to be happening for a while.
Yeah.
It's funny, I actually threw it on while I was getting ready for the day and everything. And my daughter comes in. It's like, what is this? And like, this is a band called Crowbar. She's like, I like it. So I'm like, all right, good
girl.
Yeah, no kidding. Went from Dua Lipa last weekend to this.
So. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, variation. I love it. I would probably go with a 4. And Mundy, I agree with you. I think people tend to sell metal or people who sing like this a little short, but there's so much going on in this record that it almost just demands to be listened to with headphones, because there's a lot of nuance here. Cool guitar riffs. They change directions in the song. It's really good. It's diverse. I could see people being like, oh, this just all sounds the same. He's just screaming on every song. But no, if you really listen and you give it a chance, there's a lot going on here. There's some excellent musicianship. this is a really solid record. So I would definitely tell anybody to dig in and enjoy that. So at least a 4 for me, and I will keep listening, and I've listened to it 5 or 6 times already. So yep. I'll keep going.
Cool.
What about you, Metal Ed?
Real quick, I was going to ask, yeah. Do you think you would dig into the other repertoire from them as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. Well, welcome to the crowbar train.
Woohoo! Yeah, well, there's plenty to dig into. Before I give my rating, I would recommend, Paul, I heard you mentioned Kingdom of Sorrow with him and Jamie Josta. They put out 2 albums that are fantastic. And he was, when the band Down started, that's kind of a metal super group. If people don't know, you got Phil Anselmo on vocals. When they started, it was Kirk and Pepper Keenan from Corrosion of Conformity doing the guitar work. So holy crap. You think Kirk can write some monster riffs. The 2 of them together is insane. Yeah.
Stone the Crow. So
check out Down and Kingdom of Sorrow. So I'm going to meet you guys right in the middle, actually. I'd give this probably a solid 4.25. Crowbar is Crowbar. There's nothing super shocking here, but it's just like all their other stuff. It's high quality, great songwriting, amazing riffs, great lyrics, the best song titles ever. So he is so good at naming songs. I love it. But so yeah, Crowbar, I love him. Been a fan for a long time.
Let's see.
Are you ready?
No, I would prefer you not be making eye contact with me.
I have what? Oh, sorry.
There we go.
Boy. Paul, you need some lighting in that studio.
Hey, much like Crowbar, I need it to be dark and moody. All right.
Leave me alone.
There you go.
You could be Morrissey if you're so dark and moody.
Oh, but I eat meat. That's the difference.
Oh, Lord. Oh, man. All right. Well, anyway, that was good. I enjoyed that record. That's one thing I love about this show is sometimes just you listen to one group and then you go down a rabbit hole and you get all these new things to listen to. So it's exciting. Paul. Just a real quick reflash. I don't know.
Keep my shirt on.
Please don't do that. tell us about the challenge again so we can be refreshed for next week.
Okay. So much like I described earlier, there was, when's the Bob Dylan episode?
She's dying for us to talk about Bob Dylan or Greta Van Fleet. So one of these times we're going to do it for her.
I don't think she wants me to talk about Bob Dylan.
Is it honest. Fiona Apple quality episode?
Well, I kind of want to see. I want to have her on the show when you talk about Bob Dylan.
If I got to listen to him sing, it's not going to be pretty.
I found a meme of him the other day where he was originally playing harmonica, but he has a Super Mario 3 NES cartridge. Looks like he's blowing into the cartridge to clear it out. It's gold. But anyway, so as I described earlier, there was a YouTube video I found years ago where an employee of a video store had Jesus Christ Superstar playing in the background and he was listening to a Godflesh album and perfect serendipitous moment occurred where the music synced up with a key scene and it worked for the majority of the footage, if you will. So if you have any happy accidents with visuals and tunes that you're listening to that you can either recall or that you can come up with, I'm all ears because those things are fun.
Okay. Excellent. And then, Paul, also you have the Lester Bangs Challenge. So I think we might just, if they're music fans from the comics company, next week we'll do that with them. If not, we'll hold off. We'll do that in 2 weeks as well.
Okay.
But next week we have Starchild Comics in with us. It's a new company, and they've got a new line of superhero comics. And so we've been given a couple of their issues, the first issues. And so we're going to look at those. We're going to review them a little bit, and then we're going to talk to the company about their plans for extending their new comic book line. So I hope you guys who are comic book fans will come back next week and check that out. Mr. Mundy, if we were trying to find you on any kind of social media, where would you find you?
Well, like it says right there, you can find me on Instagram at Metalhead Mundy, MUNDY.
Why? Because we like him. Paul, where can we find you?
You can find me, as shown on the screen, at The Phoenix Supernova on Instagram. I'm going to throw you a curveball because just this week I relaunched JustPlainPaul.com. So there's links to my albums on Spotify there. You can sign up for my newsletter. More content will be rolling out as things progress. But, you know, it's a two-pager. You can either hit the contact page or visit the homepage and laugh at my Instagram post under Just Plain Paul as well. So JustPlainPaul.com. Get, look at that. Yeah.
Because he's special.
That's subjective.
So are you going to be releasing any kind of new music coming up anytime soon or snippets of some new stuff you're working on?
Yeah, that's in the pipeline. And I've done some freelance work for podcasts as well, aside from ourselves, some collaborators and such. So just trying to get the feelers out there. If anybody needs some media for their creative endeavors, happy to help.
So if they wanted to purchase, say, oh, I don't know, one of your remixes of a dear friend of ours on the show, where could they get that?
You would have to go to beautyandchaosmusic.com to visit Michael Ciravolo's page, and you can get a couple of the albums. They're a limited edition with two CD sets, and the Phoenix Supernova is featured on those prominently. Actually, I got my copy in the mail yesterday, listened to it when we were on the road, so it was nice to hear it mastered in the car. It felt pretty good. I felt pretty happy with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you can find me, Foggy's Pal, on Instagram and Twitter. And you can find Wanderings and Wool Gathering on YouTube, Apple Music, Spotify, the Kokomo Lantern, Stitcher, CastBox, and SoundCloud. If you like what you hear, give us a review and subscribe. For music, movies, and comics reviews, head over to wanderingsandwoolgathering.com. We will see you next week when we chat with the good folks at Starchild Comics. Till then, bye now.
This is the part where I play music.
You're behind, Paul. Come on. The folks expect more.
Leave my behind out of this. And we're experiencing technical difficulties because
if this keeps going, I'm going to play the Metalhead song again. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Bring us home.